body.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Lights Out, baby. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your host, Austin.
Surprised you there, didn't I?
Yeah, that was good.
It is October 2024, and we're coming at you today with one of the most terrifying, violent, paranormal hauntings you've ever heard of. And I'm surprised that we haven't covered this yet. After doing the show for a couple of years, I've definitely run across it in the past, and I don't know why it never made it onto the channel until now.
Yeah.
Because it's fucking crazy.
I love that there's still hidden gems we can find that we just really haven't gone through it all.
I know. That makes me happy.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get very sad that we've literally covered every good haunting on the face of the planet, but no. Today we're covering the San Pedro haunting, and this is a absolutely crazy story, and it revolves around a woman named Jackie Hernandez. And you know, this has been covered by a lot of different people, but as we've learned through our research, a lot of people get the story wrong.
Yes, there's a lot of conflicting information out there, so we did our best here to get it all straight.
We did get it straight, right?
We got it straight.
100%. We need to say that a little more confidence. Yeah, there. Yeah. We sifted through everything that's out there pretty much and tried to put together the facts regarding this case, because you know, people go a lot of different directions with it, but...
And that's the nature of paranormal sometimes, is people are like, oh, well, it's kind of inconsequential. We can tag on a little bit of fluff here and there and sensationalize this. And so sometimes even the books that were published, people were pointing out some inconsistencies and maybe some exacerbation with some of the... But as far as we got it, I think this is about as true as you can get to what happened.
It's an interesting one because we have perhaps, and again, we'll talk about what we think is behind this haunting, because there's a couple different theories that people have, but the leading theory is this is a poltergeist case because of the just sheer violent nature of whatever this entity is. We're talking about paranormal investigators coming in and being violently attacked. And I mean, the amount,
which is rare,
right? And also just the amount of paranormal activity that is captured on photo, video, and just reported by Jackie Hernandez herself is astounding, really.
It's corroborated by a lot of people who are in the house. Yeah.
So based off of that, I think a lot of people believe that this is one of the legit ones out there.
Yeah. And as far as, I mean, we can get into the skepticism, but this is one of the cases where monetary gain, it's not that big of a deal. Like, there was definitely money. They were doing some TV circuit press stuff, and they had some books and some documentaries and stuff about it. But it was also overshadowed a lot by the Amityville Horror at the time in the 70s, because that was just, the Warrens kind of overshadowed every paranormal event in the U.S. in the late 1900s, right? So it never really kind of caught on as much because it didn't have that Warren stamp of approval.
Yeah, which is surprising, because if there's any case that could have been a very successful film or really franchise based off of this, this would be it.
I want to see this movie get made.
Yeah, like fucking crazy.
I want them to kind of do a Conjuring of this. I
think, and like rated R though.
Yeah,
we need
definitely.
A rated R paranormal.
Yeah,
movie. It's been a while, but yeah, we're gonna dive into the San Pedro haunting today. Again, there's a couple different pronunciations when it comes to San Pedro. We're going with San Pedro because we looked into it. Sounds like that's the correct way to say it. A lot of people say San Pedro.
Right. So technically,
Pedro.
The Spanish pronunciation is San Pedro, but we're going with kind of more historical pronunciation, which is, we believe, is San Pedro.
San Pedro. So our story begins in the winter of 1988 with 23-year-old Jackie Hernandez, who was pregnant with her second child. But the relationship with her husband, Al Hernandez, was falling apart. And to add to this, she could sense something strange inside of her home. On countless nights, she always woke up at midnight, which is very interesting to me. It's always the same time that she's waking up. And sometimes it was after a vivid, recurring dream. And in this dream, She walked in the shoes of a younger man on the shores of the San Pedro Harbor, not far from where she lived. The buildings around her looked like they're from the early 1900s. But soon, this dream became a nightmare because she was attacked, clubbed with a lead pipe, and then drowned in the San Pedro Harbor. In this dream, she became the dead man, experiencing the horror of being held underwater as he fought for his life, but ultimately drowned. That's a scary nightmare.
Yeah. To have it recurring, too, that would just stress me out every night.
You ever died in a dream?
Yes. I have a very specific dream. I used to have a recurring dream where I died at the end of when I was a kid.
Damn. As a kid?
Yes. Long story short. Daniel's over there looking at me like, what? Yeah, crazy. I was always at this big mansion. My brother turned into a pig. There's a lot of family members there. And they would always take me up this spiral staircase. It was like really far, like 7 stories or something. And I would be exhausted by the end. And then one of my family members, like extended or immediate, would pick me up and drop me down the very center of the staircase. But I would land, I would think I was going to die, but I would land in water and then I would be eaten by an alligator.
Damn.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. That was a recurring dream I had when I was a kid quite often. After a while, I found out how to wake myself up from the dream because I was able to identify that I was in the dream. I was like, I know I've been here before. And you know how you don't often realize that you're in a dream, right? It's just the nature of dreams. But since I had had that dream so many times, I learned to cross my eyes in my sleep and it would wake me up.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
Yeah. So that's my recurring death dream. I had a lot of anxiety as a kid too, so that probably contributed to it.
Yeah, that's terrifying. Still, I think hers is worse.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Jackie's is a little bit scarier, in my opinion. But yours is up there. It's up there.
You know what? I think mine was scarier.
Anyways, at the time that she was having this reoccurring nightmare, she really didn't know if this had any significance whatsoever, but it always bothered her. By early the following year, after the birth of her daughter, Samantha, Jackie had separated from her husband. The breakup was somewhat amicable, and, you know, they just kind of went their separate ways and left it at that. And it was decided that Jackie would take their 2 children, 2-year-old Jamie and newborn Samantha, for the time being. But they agreed that Al would still be allowed to be a part of the children's lives. During the separation, Jackie had lived in a small home on West 11th Street in San Pedro, California. She worked full-time and also took night classes to advance her career. And despite her busy lifestyle, she did all she could to balance motherhood, work, and school. So not an easy life by any means. Essentially a single mom at this point.
Yeah.
After living in the San Pedro house for several months, she came home one night after a long day. And ever since moving into this new place, Jackie's old fear of being alone grew worse and worse. Her new house was small and easy to break into, and the feeling of safety and security she had once had with her estranged husband was now gone. She feared nothing more than a break-in late at night, and when she heard a knock on the front door that night, she grew very anxious. But as she answered the door, only her husband, Al, stood on her front porch. His new rental had apparently caught fire, and he needed a place to stay for a couple of weeks before he could find a new apartment. Jackie's fear of break-ins lessened with her husband back in the house, but her worst nightmare would begin later that night. It wasn't the type of fear that she had expected, and it all started with a simple movement inside of the house. She had been walking by a writing desk when the pencil holder flew from its surface and hit the floor near where she had been standing. Al had also been in the room, but neither of them had been near the desk. So like, what the fuck? Like, this just flew off the desk? What's going on here? The first incident was easy enough to brush off because you're like, yeah, I didn't just see that.
Like, yeah, it could be anything.
Maybe a draft from the AC right. Blew it over or something like that. But little by little, strange and seemingly innocent events kept occurring. Objects would disappear and then reappear across the house. And Jackie often felt like she was being watched by something. Even Jackie's new cat would draw attention to the shifting energies and odd movements in the house. Some nights the cat would even arch its back in fear when no one was there and seemed to chase invisible objects. Maybe the cat's seen something, or maybe the cat's a scaredy cat.
Yeah, it could be.
And every little noise. I mean, there's some cats that are jumpy and could do weird stuff.
They do say, though, pets, you know, it freaks people out when they think they can see something. It's like, what am I not picking up on in our home where you should feel safe? So
my cat's picked up on a paranormal, I believe a paranormal.
Oh, yeah, I remember
spirit
this.
In an apartment complex that we used to live in. She would sit in the corner and just stare up at the ceiling meowing.
Right.
Has never done it since. Yeah. Since we left that place.
So it sets you off a little bit. You're like, why are you drawing your attention towards this? Or why is something drawing your attention towards this?
Especially when it's so specific, right?
Exactly.
Like, it was just bizarre that it was like this corner of her bedroom. And it was just like, she was just staring up and meowing. Just like, it was so bizarre. We'd never seen her do it before. And, you know, my wife actually had like, she believed she saw some type of apparition spirit within the room one night. But anyways, that's a story we've probably already told. But yeah, cats are, I feel like, very in tune with spiritual energies, paranormal energies. I think animals probably in general are. So her cat's kind of acting weird, you know, and I think anybody would be like, okay, you know, is there something wrong with my cat, or are they picking up on something? The next strange thing that she encountered was an odd sound coming from inside the walls of her house. Al had moved out by then, and Jackie had just put the kids to bed, sat in the living room and turned on the TV to try and relax. The noise began as a slight knocking from within the drywall, like tiny pebbles were colliding with the wall and running down them. Once loud enough, Jackie muted the television and approached the wall. She then proceeded to press up one ear to the wall and listen. She figured it must be some mice scaling the interior side of the wall, or maybe some rodent-kicked pebbles or dirt from the floor above into the wall. But her theory quickly changed when she heard what sounded like slow, creeping footsteps crossing the attic floor above her. Imagine how, A, you'd be like, am I going insane? But just how creepy, you know, your kids are in bed asleep, and you're alone, and you're hearing these strange noises in the wall, and then now you're hearing them above you, footsteps. Yeah. That would scare me.
What would you do?
Scream. Wake my kids up and say, we're getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
But I would probably, really, I'd be like, I need to go see what's going on up there.
That's what I would be curious too. Yeah. And I think that's why, you know, they say some people are really stupid in horror movies. I would be like, yeah, what's up there? And I would bust up there, and then immediately I would be the first one dead, I think. Because I would be too skeptical. I'd be like, there's a rational explanation for
there's
whatever's
just a
up there.
Big old fat rat running around.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go put a trap up there.
Yeah.
I would probably go grab a weapon and a big old fucking flashlight.
Yeah, I'd rack my shotgun really loud so that something's up there could hear it. Yeah.
I'm gonna blast you away.
Yeah, just start putting holes in the ceiling.
There you go. It's one way to take care of it. But instead of doing anything about it or going and peeking into the attic, Jackie just shrugged it off and put it out of her mind. Because again, at this point in time, the sounds were harmless, and she thought maybe her mind was just playing tricks on her. And a few days passed by without any incident, and it seemed like the noises were just a fluke. Another evening, Jackie invited her good friend and neighbor over, Susan Castaneda. The kids had been put to bed, and the two friends decided to relax and chat in the living room. She casually mentioned she might have an animal living in her attic and described the pebble noises and the potential footsteps she had heard. During their conversation, a loud bang interrupted them. Something had crashed to the floor in the kitchen. So they're like, all right, we got to go check that out. So they go into the kitchen and they find that a painting had fallen off the wall. When is nothing too crazy.
It's happened to me.
But like, usually, I feel like there's a reason usually. I mean, do paintings just like fall off their hooks randomly? Have you ever had that?
Yeah, I actually have had that. Usually it's, I didn't hang it
poor
properly.
Mounting.
Yeah, that was usually my fault.
You stapled like, it to the wall.
Like the nail wasn't, you know how you're supposed to kind of drive the nail down? I kind of drove the nail like at a perpendicular. So it just, the painting was too heavy for it. And so it pulled the nail out and it fell to the floor. So I guess it can happen, right?
Yeah, my dogs have like bumped into the wall and like
shook it off.
Stuff.
Yeah,
have broken a few frames that way.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of this haunting, because you can write all these things off. You're like, oh, there's an explanation for that. There's an explanation for that, right?
But as far as we know, there's no animals bumping the walls. The cat maybe, but a cat's not going to be strong enough to, or heavy enough to bump something off the wall.
Yeah.
So here's the odd thing about it. They go in the kitchen, they find the painting, it's propped up against the wall. But what's even more bizarre is that they find two nails and they're on their heads. So on the flat side of the nail with the pointy side pointing up, and they're just perfectly sitting there on the ground. And is it possible that they just both landed that way? Yeah, could be. Maybe. But I don't know. That's really weird for that. How?
Yeah, it's odd.
It's possible,
but it's an odd image that I've never seen land exactly like that.
Both of them too.
Right.
Boop, boop. But the more they thought about it, the more odd it became, especially since Jackie had mentioned the strange noises in the walls and the attic from the other day. So together they're like, okay, let's think about this. This is all very weird, you know. Maybe there's something going on. Because Susan thought that the two events were connected, but she really didn't want to freak Jackie out. But internally, she's like, okay, this is fucking weird. Something's up here. So they picked up the painting from the floor and then changed the conversation. Susan then left the house a bit later and said that she'd be in touch. Meanwhile, the odd noises in the walls in the attic continued into the late hours of the night. But Jackie refused to go up and peek inside the attic. She would eventually go look up there a few days later, but not to check for the source of the noise. A friend told her she had recently found a good amount of cash tucked away in the attic of an old San Pedro house that she lived in, and apparently it had been stored by a former tenant. That's pretty damn lucky. Jackie figured since she also lived in a similar old house, maybe I should go check out the attic and see if I can find some extra cash. Again, she's not really going up there to investigate any of the noises she's been hearing. And luckily, with this story, we do have some interview clips from Jackie Hernandez herself. So here's what Jackie said happened next.
I thought, I have an old house with an attic, and I was just talking to a friend of mine, Chrissy, who was there with me. And I said, well, why don't I just go up and give it a shot? You know, what do I got to lose? So the attic door was directly above in the laundry room. So I stood on the washing machine, and I opened the trap door, and I was looking around, and I remember feeling these eyes looking at me. It was as if somebody was right behind me, just looking right at me. And I turned around and I didn't see anything. Now the attic was empty and it was dark and you couldn't see anything really. And I turned around again because I got this very uncomfortable feeling that something was definitely there and looking right at me. And as I looked towards the far side of the attic, this head, it was a chubby man, and the head started at the far side of the attic and came directly at me with, I didn't even have time to think about it, my reaction. My legs just gave out from underneath me. I was so scared. I didn't have time to think what it was or really look at it or, you know, decide what I was going to do. My legs did the decision making for me. The feeling was pure fright. I was scared to death. I mean, my legs were just turned to rubber. I fell off the washing machine. My friend was right below me. She didn't see anything, but she saw the look on my face, and she saw that I just fell completely off the washing machine. And I couldn't stand up after that for a minute, just because my legs just said no. You know, they wouldn't work.
Well, that's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, right.
She goes up there to hopefully find some money, and she's presented with this head.
Yeah, a disembodied head. Yeah, just floating.
What do you mean? So that's the first time we've heard from Jackie, and my gut feeling is it seems like she's being truthful and like just recounting what she experienced.
Yeah,
she's looking forward. She's not really like looking off. Like if you're thinking about
liars,
right? Exactly.
Yeah,
you know, they often look away or like kind of fumble through their story, but she's like the way she tells it makes me believe that that's what she experienced. That's just me, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not quite ready to call her a liar. I do have some theories, which we can get into a little bit later, I think. But I don't know. As far as I think that she could have totally seen a face in the attic. I don't think there's anything.
Well, the attic was, wild. I mean, because in my mind, I'm like, could she have confused an object up there as a head or something, sure, based on the lighting?
Super
or something.
Dark, yeah.
But it seems like the attic was basically empty.
Yeah, and I do think a part of us, like, we see what we want to see. I also think there's maybe a bit of suspense of her just going up there to begin with because she knows she's hearing the noises.
She almost is expecting to see something scary up there.
But I'm not quite ready to call her a liar.
Good.
If that's where you're... Yeah.
That's my girl, man.
But yeah, I think it's pretty fascinating. Also, there is... So keep in mind her description of it. She said it was kind of like a chubby face.
Mm-hmm. Could there be someone living up there?
Could there? That would be so nuts. Scary.
Can you imagine?
Absolutely not. That would be so terrifying.
They haven't left the attic for years.
Oh, just man. There. So I, small side story, I used to do this job that I really hated where I had to go inside typically vacant houses a lot of the times just to inspect, make sure there was no gas leaks, there was nobody living in there, et cetera, et cetera. So often, you know, I'd have the keys and get in and be like, hey, property inspector here, just to make sure, you know, see if
don't
I
don't walk in on response. Anybody.
Yeah. Because yeah, I mean, there was a good, a fair chance that there might have been a squatter or something. So anyways, I kind of knew someone. It was like my second cousin who was also kind of related to the business, but she went through the photographs that we would send in. And so she worked for a different company, but one of the times one of her guys went in and was taking pictures of the attic. And then he was like, house is clear on his form. It's all good. Nothing disturbing. And when she received the photographs, he wasn't really paying attention to what he was seeing. Because you just go in quickly. You're like, I got to get to the next one. So you're just taking pictures. And yeah, sure enough, with the flash on, he kind of had just reached up through the little scuttle hole, took the picture. When he sent the photo in, he didn't even realize, there was a person just living up there.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Dude, they were just dead silent. And they were, you could see their outline in the window.
Like, wow, that's creepy.
It was really creepy.
Check your attics, people.
Check your attics.
You never know.
You never know.
If you've never been up there, do it.
Check it out. Oh, man. But yeah, so on the following night, Jackie, she needed some time out of the house. You know, the stress from work, school, motherhood, and the strange events in the house. I basically just put her on edge, so she found a babysitter, Tina, so that they could go out that evening, and she decided not to tell Tina anything about the strange events inside the house. She would cycle through a few babysitters through this story. She even mentioned Chrissy in that interview, which is another babysitter that she got. But later that night, Tina had put the kids to sleep, sat on the couch to watch TV. After a while, she went to the children's bedrooms to check on them, and as she reached her hand toward the door of the children's bedroom, before she could even make contact with her hand, the door kind of just creaked open on its own. She thought, you know, maybe her mind was playing tricks on her. Maybe the door frame wasn't level or a draft had come in. You know, you just make all these rationalizations for it. But as she walked into the bedroom, she saw Jamie and Samantha they were fine. They were fast asleep. Jamie often slept in his bunk bed along one wall, and one of the bunks remained empty while he slept on the other one. I think he slept on the top one, but couldn't confirm. And Samantha, she slept in her crib, which was along the opposite wall in the same bedroom. They were fine. So things went on as normal. Nothing odd happened through the rest of the night. When Jackie got home, Tina told her about the bedroom door. But instead of reassuring her that, you know, it was probably nothing, Jackie showed genuine concern on her face. Tina quickly left. She took her payment, and that was that. Jackie then checked on her kids, who were safe, still fast asleep, before she went to bed herself. The house was quiet the rest of the night. On another day, another babysitter, Chrissy, came over again to watch the kids for a while, but this time she was more on edge. Before Jackie left for the evening, the two were in the kitchen discussing the kids' nightly routine when Chrissy noticed a light out of the corner of her eye. A strange light glowed near the ceiling. She asked if Jackie had maybe installed a new light fixture, but she hadn't. So both of them stared at this weird circular light. It began slowly spinning and then dividing until there were multiple orbs. It would gyrate and spin. Knowing they could never convince anyone that they saw this abnormality, they actually took a picture, and this would mark the first odd picture taken during the San Pedro haunting. And this would also mark the first time Jackie could confirm with evidence that something supernatural was going on inside this house. And this supernatural phenomenon would not only continue, but get worse over time. What do you think? What do you think of these lights?
Yeah, it's really hard to describe what we're even seeing because the lights,
they're like blobs.
They look like blobs, yeah.
And normally a light coming from a source of like electricity has a very distinct look to it.
Right.
Typically just solid and circular.
It almost looks like it would be, I don't know why, like squishy blobs.
Yeah. I was like ectoplasmic blobs.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine it's like three little glowing orbs or blobs that are gyrating and spinning. And I can't think of anything rational that would look like this, really.
No, me neither.
So that's really crazy. And like, good on her for taking a picture.
Yeah, you know, I know.
So many times we're like, why didn't you take a picture?
We always have those critiques of our paranormal cases where you're like, just take a picture. Just get the video camera out too. But yeah, so she was smart enough to be like, hey, let's get this on camera. In another instance, Jackie noticed a gooey substance similar to coagulated blood running down her kitchen walls and cupboards. There are also photographs of this as well. To make it even worse, the ooze smelled like death. It was disgusting. And apparently this liquid was collected and later tested in a lab, which confirmed it was human male blood plasma with a high copper and iodine content. This might suggest it came from a decomposing body. So,
gross.
Disgusting.
Coming from your fucking cupboards? Yeah. Your cabinets?
Also, plasma is hard to get. You have to get that through a lab, typically, you know? So I'm like, if this is true, that is wild that that's even a part of this ooze. Also, yeah, highly unsanitary and disgusting. Objects then began throwing themselves across rooms as time went on, and as it got worse, Jackie actually just feared she was possibly losing her mind. Besides Chrissy, maybe Susan, her good friend, who else would really believe her story? The only other person she was comfortable telling was her husband, who was estranged, who was Al. And although separated, they were still on basically generally good terms. So she actually invited him over and told him everything that was going on. Al didn't believe her and thought maybe she had just, you know, gotten lonely. He knew she was afraid of being alone and afraid of potential break-ins, so maybe this was all a cry for help. He wasn't convinced there was anything supernatural going on, and Jackie later admitted she hated seeing him, but she loved the peace of mind he had provided. I think that's important to note. To test his theory that nothing paranormal was at play, he wanted to provoke whatever entity Jackie thought infested her home. And against her protest, he shouted out to the entity, commanding it to show itself. Silence filled the house, and arrogantly, Al told her, hey, look, there's nothing to be worried about, and he left. Jackie wasn't really convinced, and sometime after Al left, Jackie was going through her house as normal and went to her closet and opened it. And on the back wall, her husband's name, A.L., had been written countless times in red and blue markings. Basically, from corner to corner, the letters covered the entire wall, and it was clear to Jackie that these markings were a silent response to her husband provoking whatever was in the house.
And she took a picture of this as well.
Yeah, there's a photograph. Personally, I think this might have been the kids.
Because it looks like kids' handwriting.
Yeah.
And so, like potentially with like crayons.
So possibly kids were up to this.
All up and down the wall? They get like a stool, a chair out, and just like continue. Ow, 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 ow.
Maybe. I don't know. I think.
Or her?
I wouldn't. I think my theory is the kids did this. Also considering that the father isn't around. They're kind of dealing with their parents going through a failing marriage.
Sure.
So maybe they're stressed out and they're writing their father's name across the closet wall. That's my take on that. Or who knows? There's really no...
The entity in the attic.
Yeah. I mean, it could be. We don't have any proof to what actually did this. But on another night soon after, Jackie woke up at midnight, like she often did, and she headed to the bathroom, but also decided to check in on her children. As she entered her children's room while they were asleep, the room was near dark and silent. A small nightlight in the closet shed just a little bit of light into the rest of the room. She immediately sensed something or someone else in the room. It was a heavy presence and concealed by darkness. So in the shadows, out of the corner of her eye, she finally noticed a figure on Jamie's bunk bed in the empty bunk. It was an elderly man, barely visible by the nightlight, and he sat cross-legged on the bed, but as she turned to look at him head-on, he vanished. So in that split second, she saw him well enough to actually give a description. So here's, in Jackie's own words, her description of the man that she saw.
Very angry and evil at the same time, which made me feel uneasy. It wasn't like a friendly, welcoming type of thing. It was like he was very angry and he just seemed like, I don't know, he looked like a corpse. He looked like a corpse with the way his skin tone was, and you couldn't see through him. He wasn't transparent or anything like that. But he didn't look like a person either. And the only thing that would think his shirt, you could see the colorings of his shirt and his clothing. He was wearing gray pants and his shirt was a red flannel shirt. And he was wearing workman's boots. And he kind of resembled Jack Albertson from the actor in a way. But his look was just an evil, angry look.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he wasn't translucent, though.
I know, right? Because most ghosts you see, like...
Yeah, most apparitions are going to be spectral.
Right.
And according to her description right there, this is not a spectral being. This is, like, it's got some meat to it.
The body of like a dead man.
Yeah, yeah, a corpse, as she described it.
And for those who don't know, she says Jack Albertson, who is...
The guy who started Albertson Grocery Store.
I don't think that's him, but it's the guy, funny enough, it's Grandpa Joe in Willy Wonka.
Oh, icon.
So that'll give you like a little bit of imagery for who that is. Yeah, and also he's dressed like a lumberjack, which is kind of odd. I don't know if that's like what she was going for, because I just thought the red flannel and... some jeans and boots.
So everybody
and
wears
stuff.
Flannels or lumberjacks, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Or they're in a 90s grunge band. It's one of the two. That's it.
Or their name is Mr. Ballin.
Yeah. Who we love here.
Yeah.
Lights out. But yeah, so, you know, by now she had thought of just moving out of the house.
I would.
Yeah.
Fuck that, dude.
Yeah.
Corpses on the bunk under my child? Hell no.
I'd be out immediately.
It's over.
Agreed.
And we're burning the bunk bed.
We're burning the house.
We're
going to destroy this cursed bunk bed.
We're going to bury
it, man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
terrifying.
That's
a callback to an older episode.
Yeah.
You know, considering she had been raising two kids, working full time and on welfare to make ends meet, she just couldn't afford another move. She had basically just moved into the house. So she felt trapped within this house in San Pedro, and she voiced these concerns to her good friend Susan while out walking one day, and she was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. They surprisingly ran across her landlord while walking through town. They exchanged pleasantries, and Susan noticed Jackie wasn't planning on bringing up the odd supernatural incidents back at the house, since she didn't want people thinking she was losing her mind. So Susan took it upon herself. She interrupted, told the landlord about the house, the weird pebble noises, the footsteps, the door opening on its own, the strange lights in the kitchen, the markings on the walls, and the apparitions. You know, it's like countless at this point. Instead of immediately thinking Jackie or Susan were crazy, the landlord actually turned out to be very religious and concerned about the supernatural occurrences. She asked if it would be okay if she could send two priests over to the house to check it out. There is some conflicting information here. Some claim that it was Al who actually requested and sent the priest over. Some say it was the landlord. So just to clarify that. So Jackie was somewhat religious herself, but didn't think the haunting really had anything to do with religion. Still, she was desperate, so she agreed. The next day, two priests showed up to the house, which was a complete mess. There were paperwork, boxes, clothes scattered all across the floors. A part of me thinks that maybe this was a frantic move into the house and she just dumped all her stuff in there and then didn't bother to clean it up as time passed because, you know, she's so busy.
She's busy, yeah.
And, you know, that's what the priest figured. It's like, hey, this is a busy single mom. She's working. She's going to class full time. Didn't leave much time for cleaning. They walked around the house, not noticing much out of the ordinary besides the mess. But Jackie said later she felt like the priests were cynical and judgmental of her situation. Then the priest apparently noticed an ornamental skull inside her aquarium, and allegedly they accused her of bringing death into her house.
Jesus.
Yeah, right? That's a bold claim.
Yeah.
According to Jackie, they even went and like picked through some of her stuff to look around, and then they accused her son of being possessed by the devil because he was crying.
Where are these priests from?
I know. And I'm the like, hell? What?
They're there to comfort her, like, you brought death in here.
Yeah, right.
Your son is possessed by the devil.
I know. And so I think, you know, this is coming from Jackie, as far as I know. So maybe this is like Jackie's point of view, and she's feeling like she's being heavily judged.
Or just kind of being dismissive of the whole concept of priests coming in and doing something about her situation.
True.
Because maybe she doesn't believe in the power of priests and... or that religion, you know, is like, you know, trying to get them out. You know, what I mean?
That's a good point. I don't know. I mean, personally, growing up, I didn't know any priest who would be like, "You got a fake skull in your aquarium? You're bringing death into this house.
This is the occult at work."
Yeah, or like really quick to assume it was possession. I don't know.
Because a kid's crying.
Yeah. So I don't really know the truth here. In between the priest and Jackie, it's somewhere, but
yeah, we don't know like what church they were from or anything like
that, or their names or anything. Yeah,
it could be satanic priests for all we know,
just disguising themselves.
Can you imagine? the diagnosis seems a little bit more satanic to me than
true
Catholic, in my
true opinion, but... That is a good point. One source even claimed that the priest believed Jackie was under the influence of hallucinogenic drugs while pregnant. So that is a bold claim. I couldn't really verify this, but it is a claim that's out there. I mean, and that would go so far as to really, I mean, if she's using hallucinogenic drugs through this as well, that kind of, takes her reliability down a notch, but we can't confirm this. Mm-hmm. So,
and it's kind of hard to believe as like a single mom that she'd be doing that and taking care of her kids. Like,
right.
And working and doing all this other stuff. It just seems kind of far-fetched. That
job and stuff.
There's no way.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Unless it was like microdosing or something, you know?
Sure.
You never know, sure. But.
Yeah. But hey, without much else to do, the priests, they just offered to bless the children, said a prayer. They headed out. None is believed they contacted Child Protective Services. So the next day, knock comes to the front door. When she answers, it was CPS. Jackie figured that the priest had filed the complaint against her, claiming that she was a possible danger to her children and considering the messy environment they were living in. So CPS demanded that Jackie clean up the house and warned her they would check in again. If she didn't pull herself together, you know, she realized she would risk losing her children potentially. And this had been Jackie's biggest fear. This was the reason she didn't want to tell anyone about the haunting in the first place. Because people would immediately think she was crazy or something was seriously wrong with her. So, and I
definitely understand that. So as time passed, the paranormal activity seemed to die down a bit, but Jackie could now sense the presence within her home. Sleep deprived and overworked, her paranoia skyrocketed. So she began sleeping in the living room with her two children so she could keep an eye on them. Susan could see that her close friend was getting worse. So one day she went over to the house and urged Jackie to contact a paranormal investigator. She told her that even if they couldn't fix what was going on, they would at least take her situation seriously without thinking that Jackie was mentally unstable. So Jackie eventually agreed to this. She ended up getting in contact with a man named Dr. Barry Taff. Now, Dr. Barry Taff was an associate director of the parapsychology lab at UCLA. So, I mean, there's some legitimate creds there. His claim to fame was investigating the Doris Byther case,
which we covered. That was the one with the crazy lights going through like the living room.
All
the people were witnessing that.
That's another really, really crazy case.
Yeah.
So Dr. Taff had covered nearly 3,000 cases before going to Jackie's, and he said, quote, "The majority of cases aren't worth pursuing. There's a lot of fabrication, a lot of invention, and a lot of embellishment, and just a lot of outright fraud." So he's being very honest.
He knows, yeah.
This is, yeah, so I think there's some credibility there. He's not just going to go on there and be like, oh my God, there's a demon.
Immediately. Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's going to actually try to see if he can figure out what's going on. And although he was skeptical of her story, he brought along a crew with him, including his trusted cameraman, Barry Conrad, over to the San Pedro house in hopes of capturing some paranormal footage. He figured that, like most cases, there was a rational explanation for whatever was going on here. But just in case, they packed photo cameras, video cameras, image intensifiers, and infrared detectors. When they arrived in August 1989, Al took the two kids into the one of the bedrooms, and Barry Taft began interviewing Jackie. A few minutes into the interview, the power went out. A few moments later, it returned. The investigators could see how distraught Jackie had become in those few moments. I'd be distraught too, be like, holy shit.
Yeah.
From then on, Jackie was completely terrified, and no one could comfort her. Again, this could be an embellishment based on who you ask about this story.
I think people pointed out that in one version in the book, this happened, but it didn't happen. No one mentioned it in the documentary. So there's a little conflicting information about the power going out during this.
She also told the crew that she believed the paranormal energy had manifested inside of the attic. So the crew gathered their gear, headed to the laundry room, popped open the door to the scuttle hole above, and prepared to enter the attic.
It's basically like the laundry stuff and the sink and whatever is beneath it. And if you can kind of imagine, what is it? Like a 2 foot, maybe 3 foot by 4?
3 by 4, 3 by 3 or
like
something.
Like rectangular hole in the ceiling. And you kind of have to push the panel up to get up there.
That's actually how my scuttle hole in my house is.
Is it? Yeah.
It's in my laundry room.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to go up there after this episode and just double check. Make sure there's nothing funny going on up there.
If we don't hear from Josh tomorrow, we know what happens.
I just get pulled into it. Like
on.
The crew then popped open the scuttle hole to the attic and they shined their flashlights around. And they saw that the attic was primarily empty, except for a small wooden empty box resting on the floor. While Al was in the bedroom with the children lying on one of the beds, he listened to the muffled noises of an investigator, Jeff Wheatcraft, climbing up into the attic. At the exact moment, he heard a whispering voice directly in his ear that said, "Get them the hell out of here." Wow. That, and Al is saying this too. And Al's been a skeptic.
Exactly.
Al even said he could not rationally explain the voice in his ear, but he claimed that he had heard it as clear as day. And only seconds later, someone belted out a scream from the attic. It was Jeff who had gone up first by himself. And the others watched as he came scrambling out of the scuttle hole in the ceiling with a look of terror. He told the others that he'd been trying to take photos over his shoulder behind him when something had grabbed his 35mm camera in the attic and literally pulled it out of his hands. The others, even the more skeptical investigators, gathered around and started to worry. Jeff told the rest that he had dropped his expensive camera in the attic when he had fled, so he decided to go back up and get it. When he crawled back up with another investigator, Barry Conrad, he found the camera in the wooden box on one side of the attic, but the lens was missing. He eventually discovered it several feet across on the floor, and then he was like, "I'm getting the fuck out of here," and he returned to the first floor. And to the others, he was visibly shaken. So, traumatic right there. I mean, he's like, did not expect probably any of that to happen, and then all of a sudden he's experiencing something he can't explain.
Right. And we'll see that Jeff becomes quite a target.
Yes.
Through the rest of this. Poor Jeff.
Poor Jeff. Some of the other investigators tried to take a video camera up into the attic, but almost every time it crossed the threshold through the scuttle hole, it malfunctioned and turned off. When it was returned to the first floor, though, it started operating normally again, until something very odd happened. Every time the paranormal energy ramped up, most of their equipment would malfunction. They could only get the video cameras to operate normally for a few minutes at a time, at most. The investigators spent more time up there and many witnessed odd lights, similar to the ones that Jackie had seen in her kitchen. And Jeff Wheatcraft was actually able to capture a few in photographs. So we have some, we'll put it up on screen, but there's a couple photographs from his 35mm camera, it looks like. Meanwhile, many of the others caught a whiff of a rancid smell coming from the attic, but it faded over time. But then it would return at random moments. Most of the activity was innocent enough, except when it came to Jeff Wheatcraft. For some reason, whatever this entity was violently drawn to Jeff. He had witnessed a giant shadow in the attic and later felt a vast skeletal hand pushing against his back. Apparently, it felt five times the size of a normal human hand. And after this, Jeff later developed severe back pain in the days that followed this encounter. So painful that he eventually sought out medical treatment. Like, holy shit.
That's crazy.
We have a very strong, violent something.
Yeah.
Up here. Like, holy shit. So bad that he needs to, like, see a chiropractor.
Right.
Get his back fixed.
Whatever it is, he's just like, saw Jeff. He's like, I don't like this guy.
Yeah. What did Jeff ever do this thing?
Right.
Maybe we'll find out. Eventually, the crew returned to the first floor, and while they discussed their findings, everyone stopped and listened to the sound of labored footsteps in the attic, even though, again, no one was up there. Barry Taft described it as a 200-pound rat. Then the paranormal energy began manifesting in the laundry room beneath the scuttle hole. And we actually have some footage from that.
What happened? It's something grabbed that out of my hand. I'm not kidding. Something grabbed the whole thing out of my hand.
Just now.
Just now. It grabbed the whole thing out of my hand.
Yeah. Okay.
Hear it? It's
walking back and forth up there.
It is walking, definitely.
Yes. Quiet, everyone. Shh, quiet.
Go ahead and talk.
That's where the noises come from. Sometimes there's a noise like a deep hum, and it's come from right here in midair. It's come from right
here. So you've heard noises in this room?
Oh, yeah, deep humming, it comes from right here, right in the center of the room. And there's nothing here.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's loud, too.
Yeah.
A lot louder than you'd expect.
Yeah.
God, it just sounds like something's angry and pissed off back there.
Right.
It's like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Whew.
I can't explain that one.
No. 200-pound rat?
200-pound rat.
Shit. Something heavy up there.
That's what they used to call me in high school.
The 200-pound rat. That'd be a good band name.
Yeah.
We're the 200-pound rat. We're heavy as fuck. Well, the pounding noises eventually subsided. And nothing more happened. So the crew decided to pack up and leave for the night. And Jackie said, please don't leave me. Are you fucking kidding me? What's wrong with you? We need you to stay. Because that's what I don't get. I'm like, you have all this happen and then just kind of goes like, yeah, that was crazy, but we'll call it a night.
Right,
like,
yeah.
If you're investigating, you just be like, gotta just sit here and watch this.
I don't know the time frame, but I'm assuming like there
a lot of time.
This might be like 5 a.m. or something.
Right.
We have to go to sleep.
Yeah. We're going to start hallucinating if we don't get some rest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they left Jackie alone with her children once again. But the investigators promised that they would return. Later, Dr. Barry Taft theorized that what was happening in all this activity in the attic could have been similar to the stone tape theory, which we've definitely talked about on the show before. And this is the idea that certain building materials, such as stone, can act as a, quote, tape or recording medium for past events. This theory argues that the physical environment itself records the events in a paranormal way. Or as he put it, it's like pushing the button on a VCR. It's an interesting theory.
Yeah. And for our Gen Z listeners, do we need to explain what a VCR is?
So back in the day, there's tapes. You put them in this machine. You'd have to rewind these tapes
if you'd
already watched them.
Oh, yeah.
To then watch it again.
Yep.
Yeah, VCRs, man.
Yeah, those were all the rage. Tape though degrades really poorly. So like a lot of tapes that we had from growing up, they'll just be nothing.
They'll like disintegrate over time. I feel like
in like a few years,
especially if they're not like vacuum sealed or something. Right. It's also important to note that Jackie's estranged husband Al also had to leave that night since he worked early in the morning. So again, Jackie was left alone with the children and extremely terrified, extremely paranoid, as you can imagine. I mean, you saw in the clip, she's clearly shaken up. She's clearly like, something's going on here. This is insane. So she was worried that with the paranormal investigators there, something about their presence clearly provoked this entity that we're, you know, I guess is what we're calling it at this point, that whatever this thing is up in the attic.
And isn't that terrible? She calls them. She's like, please help me. And they come in and just rile it up and it gets worse.
Shit's getting ripped out. You got a skeletal hand. Yeah. It's like, holy.
And then they leave and you're like, I thought you guys were coming to help me. This is just possibly just made it worse.
Yeah.
Poor Jackie. So the paranormal activity continued for several weeks after this. Objects kept floating and moving on their own. Appliances would turn on and off on their own. When Jackie would try to retrieve or interact with these objects, she was often thrown and even strangled by an invisible force. On another night about 3 weeks later, Jackie tried to sleep on the living room sofa, kind of feeling abandoned by everyone, except obviously her children are still there, and they were sleeping with her also in the living room. Eventually, she finally fell asleep, but something woke her in the middle of the night. And as her eyes focused, she noticed this towering figure toward the end of the sofa. And looking up, she saw what looked like the same man she had seen on her son's bunk bed. Remember, it just looked like a corpse, a lumberjack corpse, Grandpa Joe. But he wasn't looking at her. The figure actually stared at her children, who were fast asleep. Jackie then screamed and the figure vanished. She immediately...
Oh, I was going to say, this encounter that she has reminds me of sleep paralysis. Mm. And I really wonder if this part of her story was a sleep paralysis incident. Because A, she's already tired. Because if you look at sleep paralysis, what causes it, and stress, anxiety... Mm. Lack of sleep, all of these different things.
Yeah.
All of the ingredients are there for sleep paralysis. And it's, you often wake up suddenly and there's a figure over you. So I wonder if this was a sleep paralysis episode possibly.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's also what makes this case really interesting. It's like, what is the actual supernatural and what can kind of be explained by something very rational, weaves a very fine line in this case. So she immediately, after seeing this figure, she immediately called the team of paranormal investigators, but it went straight to voicemail. Who knows? It's probably very late at night, right? She left a frantic voicemail telling them what had happened that night, and she was just desperately begging them to return. One of the photographers, Jeff Wheatcraft, heard the voicemail and decided to respond. So he and a few others returned to the house in the dead of night. Meanwhile, Jackie took her children outside and they sat on the porch until the crew and some friends arrived. The friends then watched the children while the investigators searched the house. When the crew first entered, all the rooms, including the attic, were dead silent. Everything seemed normal, unlike what Jackie had described in her voicemail. They ventured further into the house, but still nothing. So some time had passed and Jackie and the investigators discussed what they should do next. After a while, one of the investigators, Jeff, figured, you know, hey, let's take another look in the attic. No one had been up there yet, and he knew that's where most of the paranormal energy had manifested during their previous visit. So it was decided that Jeff Wheatcraft and Gary Bohm would go up there. Gary held a camera, and one of them, Jeff, carried a flashlight. The plan was for Jackie and the rest to stay on the first floor. It's important to note, this is not a big attic. This is a very small attic. It's basically, it's not even like a full room. It's just like the rafters of the roof. If I had to guess, it's maybe like
a couple hundred square feet or something.
Yeah. It's just not that big. So there's probably also just the logistics of how many people we can even get up there. So the two were going to go up there. Jeff would go up first and then Gary would follow with the camera. So before heading into the attic, they all heard a snap up in the attic, like the snap of a finger, and then another and another, then the attic returned to silence. Jackie immediately started panicking. The investigators tried to calm her down, saying that the snaps looked, they might have just been something hitting the roof, or maybe their weight shifted the old wood in the attic when they got near the laundry room ceiling, but really nothing would calm her down. Jeff then headed into the pitch black attic with Gary following close behind, but something went wrong before Gary could even get up through the scuttle hole. Something in the dark had yanked Jeff backward as he made his way across the attic. Whatever gripped him pulled him back fast enough that his glasses fell from his face and he dropped his flashlight. So in near total darkness, Gary, halfway through the scuttle hole, kind of peeking in, could only hear silence. There was nothing. The flashlight had fallen to the ground, so he couldn't even really see anything. So in order to see, Gary pulled up, he figured, hey, I have a flash camera. So he pulled up his camera and he began taking photographs of the attic, kind of in the general direction of where he last heard Jeff, hoping that anything would come through with a flash photography. In the confusion, Gary finally caught a short glimpse of where Jeff disappeared in the darkness. And for only a split second, he saw Jeff hoisted up toward one of the rafters on the underside of the roof. And these two photographs that he would take, they would later become some of the most famous photographs in paranormal investigation history. They are very creepy to see. So for our listeners, in the first photo, Jeff is seen. He has his eyes rolled back in his head and his neck and shirt collar seem to be held up by something behind him, kind of pinning him to the underside of the roof. Gary then took one more picture and noticed Jeff had a blank stare on his face. And the first thing he said was, "There's something on my neck." Still in a strange daze, he then said, "No, there's nothing on my neck." So completely confused. And in this second photo, a thin white object can be seen wrapped around Jeff's neck.
Yeah, let's look at these. This is honestly insane.
Yeah.
Because the first photo, it definitely looks like, if you zoom in, that his shirt collar is like pulled up.
Right.
Like, yeah, there's tension on it.
Mm-hmm.
And his neck's kind of bent. And again, this is like not a room that he could probably stand completely straight up in.
Right.
But yet he's like pressed against the angle of the roof, the ceiling, and seemingly pulled up,
yeah,
by something. And then the next photo is even crazier because, yeah, there's like this little wire or, yeah, something that's got him from behind the neck, and he's making these crazy faces, and it's like,
and it's also creepy that he's saying he doesn't even understand. He's like, no, there's not anything on my neck, but then he's like, no, there is. So,
and the photos clearly captured something,
right? So confused, Gary ran over to help, and he noticed that Jeff had somehow been nearly strangled with a short clothesline connected to a nail in the wooden rafter.
Which, why on earth would there be a random nail with some clothesline?
I have no idea.
It's fucking weird.
I have, in my house when I bought it, in the attic, they did have a clothesline up there. I think, I don't know, maybe there's...
People would dry their clothes in the attic?
Yeah, and I think there might have been someone living up there at some point. I'm not sure. Like, previous tenants might have just had somebody up there. I also don't know, like, attics, maybe they're generally dry, so it's a good place, and they get kind of hot, so it's a good place maybe just to hang your clothes.
You'd think it gets steamy, though.
Right, yeah.
With your moist clothes.
Some good ventilation.
You need, yeah, like, movement, which, yeah, again, maybe some attics have attic. Most attics have attic fans.
Yeah.
Like that, so maybe.
That's what I'm assuming.
There is adequate airflow.
Yeah, yeah. So like maybe that's why the objects were up there. I don't know why they're hanging in this particular way, right? That would be like a noose that would, you know, hang someone up. I can't explain that one.
So it seems like, based on the scene, whatever this entity is, pulled him up in there and then hung him up on this clothesline.
Right.
In an act of like, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah. And remember, this is Jeff, who was the guy that was first attacked by the skeletal hand. So,
God, Jeff's just, something's got it out for him.
Yeah, there's a vendetta here for sure. We actually have some footage of Jeff coming down from the attic, and there's an interview with him as well.
We didn't know whether to go up there or what. We knew something happened.
Come on now, Jeff. What happened? Put something around my neck.
Look at his
neck. Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
He was scared.
Okay, Jeff, please get down.
I got to get out of here.
Well,
it's definitely raising him.
Jeff, please come in. Get this for him.
Get the mic. Jeff, here you go, buddy. Here you go. What happened? Are you okay, buddy?
Oh, shit. God.
Look at his neck.
Jeff, yeah, come on.
What's behind your neck?
I don't know. What's on my neck?
Come on, a piece of rope.
Oh, shit.
Gary, get down out of there, buddy. Can you find my glasses? Gary,
Jeff, look at this.
Jeff, turn
Jeff,
the camera.
Jeff, are you okay?
Jeff,
I'm fine.
Jeff, tell me what happened, buddy.
Well, I don't know, Gary. I told Gary that there was nothing happening up there, and he turned around and came. He was coming this way. All of a sudden, I feel this thing around my neck, and it's got me hanging, and it's pulling on my leg.
You were hanging?
Yeah, I was hanging. Gary had to bring me down.
What has happened, actually? I'm pulled to the side of the attic, and there's nobody up there, and I know that Gary's standing there, and, you know, he has nothing to do with it. He's at a distance from me. I see the flash from his camera. I remember that. And I know he said something to me, but I don't recall exactly what he said. But here I try to rationalize this in my mind, and I just can't do it. It's that frightening.
Get a picture of his neck.
Look at this. Look at his neck. Oh, my God.
If I had not been there, he would have strangled, and he would have probably died there in that attic if I had not been here to get him down, because he didn't know what was going on, and it was wrapped so tightly that, I couldn't get him off of that, the nail. It was over a nail, and I finally had to actually bend the nail down straight to even get the rope off of it.
This is some next level.
This is crazy.
He also, even has like a fucking ligature mark around his neck. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, I think all of our rational minds go, he must have went up there, acted this out, brought that up there with him, put it around his neck, and like,
it's a possibility.
They placed a nail up there, and like, he went to the exact spot, hung himself up there for the shot, for the footage.
It also, like, it could have been a complete accident too. Like, for whatever reason, there's just a clothesline hanging from a nail. For whatever reason, he maybe didn't see it and he walked into it or something.
But it happens to be in like a noose. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, I can't, like, I'm not going to explain that, but there is at least the possibility that those things occurred. And that's not to be like, I know someone's going to be like, stop being a stinker, man. But like, I don't know. I think it can hold up to the scrutiny of some rational explanations. I can't explain why that would be the case. It seems like completely random if that were the explanation.
It is very random. And out of the whole attic, he just ends up in that. He happens to walk to that corner and accidentally hook himself up.
Right.
Yeah.
So who knows? Unfortunately, I mean, as much evidence as this case has, unfortunately, we just don't have that moment. If we were going to actually capture that exact moment.
Too bad he didn't
have
like a GoPro on his head or something.
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, his reaction coming out, I'm like, what are these investigators also actors at the same time?
Yeah,
like,
he seems genuinely afraid. That's
filming.
Sure.
Is this like a found footage horror film they're working on? I don't know. It seemed pretty genuine to me, his reactions. He seemed kind of terrified.
I agree. And so we also have this other clip. Here's Jackie kind of explaining the incident and what happened in the immediate aftermath, which is interesting.
They would have seen that. There's no way that someone else was up in the attic at that time except for those two guys and a ghost. And there was no there's no other person. And there was the only thing in the attic other than the clothesline was the nail. There was nothing else up in that attic. It was completely empty. There's no way Jeff could have walked into a noose and been put in that position the way he was in a matter of seconds.
It would definitely killed me. It would have definitely killed me. I feel that. I really feel that now. All of a sudden, I had this thing around my neck, and it's pulling me like this up and hooks me on something. Gary had to take me off.
That night after Jeff got hung, the baby was by the front door, and she was in a carrier, and she was wide awake. And I had passed her a few times, and every time I looked down at both of the kids to make sure that they were okay, because I was very worried about them. And I had even asked, or, you know, told it and demanded that it stay away from my children in no uncertain terms. In fact, that same night in the bedroom, I said, just stay away from my kids. And it seemed Sue was the first one to notice it. I had passed Samantha seconds before and nothing was on. She was fine. Then Sue passed and she noticed that there was a red mark on the baby's forehead. And she asked about it. And that's when I noticed it. And it wasn't on seconds ago. And it freaked me out because it came so close to my kids. And it was almost as if it was saying to me, hey, I can do what I want to. Don't tell me that not to mess with your kids, because if I want to, I will. I can do anything I want.
I don't know. Look at what's on the bean.
Come
on, you guys. Let's go. Please, let's go. Please, let's go. Please, what happened to her? Oh, my God.
It wasn't something that hurt her in any way. She didn't even realize what had happened. I don't think she didn't make a peep. It was the material that was used was kind of like a lipstick or a grease paint. And it was just a slash across her head. And I had the same thought as when the blood came out of the walls, is just get it off of her as quick as possible. Because to me, that was part of it on my daughter. And I did not want that on her at all.
Time to go.
time
is up. No more investigating. You get the hell out of there. You don't care where you go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, no way.
Yeah. And so, you know, we always say no ghosts have ever killed anyone. Is this like the closest, as far as your experience in all of the cases, is this the closest we've ever gotten to a death?
Yeah, you know? It's right there. I mean, almost got hung up there in the attic. Yep. I mean, that's crazy. The it's just like the baby to me having the mark. I'm like, if we think that this is a hoax or this is all faked, they really went to that level where they're now involving the child.
Right.
So I'm like, that is pretty low.
Yeah.
To try to like make a film.
Right.
So I don't know. To me, that's like, makes me believe the story even more that now there's a mark, like something doesn't want them there.
Right.
And wants them to get out and stop doing whatever they're doing. So yeah, I'm getting the hell out of there.
100%.
I would have gotten the hell out of there a long time ago when I saw a corpse on my son's bed. I've been like, we're done.
That's
it. I'll go pitch a tent in the backyard. We'll live out there. Like, we're getting out of this house.
See, I would put up with the corpse because I would be like, man, I just moved. I don't want to move all my stuff again.
I hate moving.
So I just put up with it.
Her stuff's seemingly still packed up for the most part.
True. So just
go stay anywhere else. Like, if your kid's now on the line, no, you don't mess around with that.
Yep.
So after the hanging incident, according to Gary, something paranormal happened every 5 minutes for the rest of the night. The gas stove would turn on and objects floated and shifted through the house. Gary noted 42 different incidents in total. 42. It's nuts. And one of the worst was when Jeff was picked up by an invisible force and then thrown into one of the bookshelves on the first floor. So now it's like the shit's violent in the attic. Now shit's violent on the first floor. Whatever's there is like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Stop messing around. I don't want you here. Time to leave. So they finally are like, we've had enough. Poor Jeff's like,
he's like bloodied and bruised.
He's like, I'm quitting.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this anymore. You know, this is just getting insane. And in the aftermath, Jackie said that she felt, quote, totally drained, totally tired, and totally on edge. She and her children also finally left the house and stayed with a friend for a while, but the horrors stalked them wherever they went. So that's even more terrifying. Not only is this not isolated to this location, but it seems like it's attached to Jackie or has to do with Jackie in some way, shape, or form. After their stay with the friend, they eventually moved back in with Al for a short time in the trailer park in Weldon, which is a town about 200 miles north of San Pedro. Here, Jackie thought she could salvage what was left of her marriage. She also thought the haunting was finally over, but neither were true. Her marriage fell apart again after only a few months, and Jackie claimed that Al was abusive. So she ended up living alone in the trailer park for a while, but April 1990 rolled around, she began hearing scratching noises coming from the shed out back, and strange orbs would also circle the trailer outside. One night, while Jackie and a neighbor moved a TV from the house into the shed, Jackie caught a glimpse of the TV screen, and in a flash, she and the neighbor saw the figure of the elderly man from the previous year, who she first saw sitting on the bunk bed. So the corpse man is back, and he vanished in the blink of an eye. Later that night, while back in the house, Jackie heard pounding coming from inside the shed, like someone was trying to escape. With no one else to turn to, she called Dr. Barry Taff and his investigative team again. He's go, please no.
They're like, Jesus, we're already done. Had enough. Yeah,
we're out of business, actually. we're going into a different career field. But, you know, in one final effort to rid Jackie of the spirits that followed her, Barry decided to gather his crew and make the long trip up to Weldon. And when they first arrived, things immediately went south. Again, none of their gear worked. Not a single piece of tech would even turn on. If they eventually got one to work, it would power down a few moments later. So at this point, Barry's like, well, we haven't done a seance yet, so let's give that a try. And Jackie even pulled out an old Ouija board. And so they cleared off the table and got to work. Jackie kept a handwritten journal of the events that followed. When they eventually made contact with the entity through the Ouija board, he told them that he had been intentionally drowned in San Pedro Bay in 1930, and his murderer had once lived in her old house in San Pedro. He also mentioned he wasn't the only entity that followed Jackie. Another was a spirit of a man. At first, it wasn't clear why the other entity followed Jackie, but she believed he was a manifestation of the lights she saw. When they asked about Jeff and the clothesline attack in the attic, the entity responded that it tried to kill Jeff because he looked identical to the man who had murdered him back in 1930.
Mm-mm.
Wow. That's pretty wild. Shit, trying to get revenge and death, I guess.
Yeah.
Barry went on to say, quote, in the whole history of the paranormal, there have been only a handful of cases, maybe five cases, where people have been harmed or injured. This is the first case I've ever been on where the phenomenon went after the researchers. Pretty wild. Barry Taff believed the entity was once a 38-year-old man named Herman Hendrickson, who he confirmed was found floating under a pier in San Pedro Bay on March 25th, 1930. This is according to the newspaper, the San Pedro News Pilot. So it seems like you got some confirmation that this actually happened. He also noted that Jackie's stress likely contributed to the intensity of the haunting. When they asked why the entity wanted to harm Jackie, all it responded was energy. After the seance was over, the paranormal activity seemed to finally die down for good. The figure of the old man never appeared to Jackie again. All they had to do was have a conversation with him, apparently.
That was it.
It's wild.
So sometimes the Ouija board
comes in handy. It's a useful tool.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just want to chat. Just clear things up. Yeah. Like, you know, hey, I just want to be talked to. I'm lonely.
Yeah. Also, I hate your friend Jeff.
Yeah.
Because I thought he looks like my murderer.
So even though I know for sure it's not the actual murderer, fuck Jeff.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to pay for what happened to me. But later that year, in 1990, Jackie and her two children moved back to the LA area. According to Jackie, only a few more incidents occurred. One night, Jackie was back in San Pedro and she spotted an orb light escaping from her old house and traveling across the sky. She saw it and she decided to follow it all the way to the end of the rainbow. No, not a rainbow, a headstone that read, quote, John Damon. And apparently he had passed away in 1913, and it's alleged he also might have been a victim of the same killer who murdered Herman. The strange light circled his grave before disappearing. Jackie believed these two spirits that followed her were from hell. Her children are fine, Jackie says. Samantha was too young to remember any of the disturbances, and her son Jamie picked up on some of the bad karma, and once was thrown against the wall by an unseen force. He also had some trouble sleeping alone, which I can only imagine. I think that's like
pretty common.
Pretty good too, considering all things.
Like, true.
Side effects wise, it, you know.
Right.
Not too bad. But otherwise, he was mostly all right. Luckily though, the paranormal incidents faded completely and Jackie never experienced anything paranormal again. She said, quote, in hindsight, I think I was fortunate to see and experience firsthand something that most people never see. And yeah, I agree with that. To her, those few years have been the lowest point in her entire life. It was a traumatic experience that she almost had no explanation for. Her babysitter Chrissy was still haunted by the events for many years after and didn't like talking about it. She believed that the haunting permanently changed both her and Jackie, and Chrissy became more religious as a result, while she thought Jackie, quote, overreacts to everything and seemed sunk into, quote, total neurosis. Jackie obviously disagreed with this statement, and the two drifted apart, and after a while, the haunting was the only thing they had in common. Jackie's story now lives on as one of the most well-documented paranormal cases of the 20th century. In 1997, the investigation footage was made into the documentary titled An Unknown Encounter, a true account of the San Pedro haunting. The case only became popular later on since it was overshadowed by the Warrens.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the classic Amityville horror from the 1970s. Barry Conrad, one of the investigators, wrote a book about the hauntings in 2009, and he and Jackie also did a circuit of television talk shows in the 90s. Many accused him of using Jackie's story for fame and notoriety, and it was also rumored that they had a romantic relationship that had started during the investigation, which, that's a little odd to me. I don't know, you know, if you're in the middle of this, like, terrifying haunting, there's a love story
It's a horror romance now.
Could be. First of its kind.
Yeah.
Apparently, Jackie never received a proper cut of the money from all the TV appearances, books, and movies she was involved in. Either way, neither Jackie nor Barry have disputed the authenticity of their experiences, and the small monetary success of the case makes many believe these events were true. There are minor inconsistencies between the 1997 full-length documentary and the 2012 Paranormal Witness episode. And as for Al Hernandez, his role has been misrepresented across several reports regarding this case. Some portray him as a skeptic throughout all of the events, and many believe the 2012 Paranormal Witness episode revised his place in the story in order to fit a certain narrative. And as for the house in San Pedro, many have moved in and out in the decades following since the haunting. Some have reported strange night thumps oozing from the walls and putrid smells seeping from the attic. Many believe paranormal energy still infests the walls and the attic to this day, forever trapped and tortured in the space between the living and the dead. So, a lot to unpack.
Where do we start?
A wild, wild paranormal case.
Okay, I do want to get this one off my chest. In a lot of these cases, you know, I like to kind of look at the family dynamic because I think that is either a catalyst or maybe a possible explanation. And what we do know about the family. So the marriage is failing. There's got to be some turmoil between Al and Jackie, right?
Just even from a custody standpoint.
Right. You have two children at play here.
Essentially a newborn.
A newborn, yeah. And then on top of that, you have Jackie, who has admitted time and again that she hates being alone. She's worried about intruders. That's like a fear that she's had even before this manifested. So I do think, you know, as even Dr. Taff said, it's like her anxieties maybe elevated this. So even if I'm not even claiming that that's a debunking thing, that could be a more of a catalyst to what's going on.
But just kind of a fact of her situation.
Yeah. So I also, you know, this is speculation on my end, but I also could see it if I'm the stinky pants here and I want to debunk it, I could see that Jackie would maybe use this as a tool to keep people around, to get Al back to the house, to get Al with the kids. There's something terrifying in my house. I need you to come back. I have this constant fear of an intruder, and I've seen intruders now. There's a dead body in my son's bunk bed. So maybe used as a tool to get people back. And then the interesting rumor that she started a relationship with Barry Conrad, who's an investigator. So is this also kind of an attempt to like draw him around to the house? So there's, and I'm not saying that as a debunking thing. I'm not saying none of this was real. I'm saying that maybe there was, you know, some layers to this onion, and she maybe was capitalizing on these events to get people back to the house, and so she wasn't so alone. Just a theory.
So you're saying that some of it could be exaggerated. There could be some paranormal activity going on, but then some of it could have been exaggerated in order to keep people around,
yeah,
because she just didn't want to be alone,
right?
In the house,
right.
And like, what better way to do that than a paranormal intruder.
Yeah.
Right? Something that you really can't get rid of. But, and also, I think one of the big questions that pops up for people is like, so like, let's all really believe in the paranormal for a second.
Sure.
Like, tons of Daniel. People. Yeah. Hey, don't bring him into this. He hasn't said anything. Which we'll get Daniel's. I want Daniel's perspective
same,
on this too.
Same.
But I think many people look at this, and if there is truly a some type of infestation, whether it be demonic, poltergeist, or other, what, you know, there's the story of the priest coming and they don't really notice anything. But a lot of people point to how come she didn't have a shaman, you know, try every cleansing. Avenue to have a proper cleansing done. Like, she never asked for a cleansing. She never asked for any sort of exorcism or any sort of ritual to be conducted at the, you know, even burn some sage in there. So,
right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
There's no real attempts to rid the house of this entity.
Mm.
And she's obviously a big believer in the entity. So, and it's obviously terrifying for her. It's violent at times. It's like, you would think if all these things are happening in the progression that we just explained them in, that there would have been a point where the desperation would have gotten so high that you'd be like, bring in everybody.
Yeah,
I want a
yeah.
priest. I want a shaman. I want
the police.
The police maybe
yeah.
to come. Yeah, that's really interesting that you bring that up, because there is no mention of police ever being called to the house too.
Not once.
Especially at the beginning. You would think that if you're hearing these noises in the attic, that, and you're alone, you're a single mom.
And your children are there.
Your children are there. You're worried about their safety, that at least at some point you'd let the police know, like, hey, this is going on
here. There might be someone in my attic.
Or maybe somebody outside, a stalker, somebody who's mm-hmm. like, fuck.
On the me. Roof or something.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That never happens either.
Yeah.
Skeptic meter goes up a little bit more.
Yeah, you know? So there's definitely some questions still here, right? And that's all I'm proposing. Because I'm tired of being the poopy pants guy. So I'm not trying to debunk anything, but I think it's healthy, as we've said, to have these questions, because if you're not willing to confront the questions, then it's not holding water, right?
Yeah. Which again, we're not, by saying these things, I don't think it negates the story
right.
in its entirety. Cause I think going back to the oozing from the cupboards and the walls, I think, you know, again, I can't show you the lab test report that
right.
says that this was human plasma, but right. let's take it for what it is.
For face value, sure.
That's pretty weird. Where
that
on
is
earth
super
does
weird.
Human plasma just, you don't just like go and buy that at the store, right?
Right,
and this
right.
is tested substance coming from the wall. That's really weird. And there have been other reports of this happening in other houses, oozing this kind of coagulated blood-like substance. So,
or the lights. How do you
explain?
I can't explain the lights.
Right.
That's mind-boggling, especially the way that they look. I can't even identify it and be like, oh, that's this, obviously, if you just look a little closer. I can't identify what the hell that is.
Is it possible that once she brought in the paranormal investigators that they were like, oh, there is something weird going on here, that they all got together and they're like, we can make this so much better, and there's a possibility for us to, you know, make a movie or make a documentary, or, you know, there's some monetary potential here with this story.
Mm-hmm.
If we kind of like, you know, kind of do what Ghost Adventures does and like, yeah, there's some paranormal
ham
stuff,
it up.
But let's ham it the fuck up for entertainment value. I think that's a real possibility here too.
For sure. Which is why it's so hard to navigate these stories sometimes, because you're like, whatever truth might lie here kind of just gets dissolved or overshadowed by people exaggerating stuff. And I always think it's like, if there is something supernatural or paranormal, it will most likely, similar to our day-to-day life, will be very seemingly inconsequential. It wouldn't be like, oh, it's this guy who was murdered, who is trying to get revenge on the guy that murdered him. Like, it's all tied up with this crazy elaborate bow and
yeah.
like, they're hanging people. And it's almost like sometimes I believe that the supernatural, if it ever did show up to me, would be very vague and confusing and not really have any substance to it. But
this has a whole backstory. Like,
yeah, you got the lore
perfectly
here.
Laid out yeah. for some type of film or to be made or a book to be written.
Right.
And yeah,
so it's not to say it's not true. There's no truth here. It's just when you add the narrative layers to something so much, personally, just for me, I'm not saying for everybody, personally, for me, it kind of, you know, degrades the reality. It's just harder to see the truth, you know?
But because I think most people, if you ask most people who've had paranormal experiences, they are very nuanced and weird and brief. And it was kind of like, oh, that was weird. You know what I mean? Like, how often do you see a story have such a deep, deep, you know, lore to it and have all of these different elements to it? Like everything paranormal that could possibly happen happened in this case. Right? Like, what are the chances? And maybe this is the one in a million chance case,
right,
where
it could be
it all happened
because
maybe there was some paranormal entity, a poltergeist, or some people even point to this just being a full-on demonic infestation. There was a straight-up demon.
It certainly seems like more of a demon, doesn't it? Like, man, if we do take it at face value, I would probably categorize this as a demon.
This seems more demonic, especially since you also have voices being heard. Mm. You have, full-blown apparitions that aren't spectral. I mean, you have so many things that feel like almost go beyond the realm of what a poltergeist would be capable of.
Yeah.
Especially like a full-on attempt on someone's life.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because they looked like somebody who murdered them. Like,
right.
Well, let's talk about what Dr. Taft thinks. So he has always believed that Jackie was a magnet for poltergeists, and as a result of the emotional issues that were occurring in her life, you know, it was a very trying time for her. It was said during the time the investigative team was present, Jackie developed, as we talked about earlier, romantic feelings towards Barry Conrad, which resulted in the attacks on Jeff Wheatcraft, possibly.
This is interesting. Mm-hmm. I find this theory interesting.
Because Jeff and Barry were very close and always together, allowing her no time to be with him, which may have caused emotional distress for Jackie, which subsequently would cause the poltergeist to attack him.
That's a crazy theory.
That is very wild. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, I like that theory.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think there's also elements of sleep paralysis here too. Like
Jackie's like, yo, I'm trying to get laid. So the poltergeist is like, fuck that guy. He's always in the way.
But then, you know, there's the theory of, was this staged for money?
Mm. I mean, considering, I don't know the numbers. They did have the documentary. There's the episode. There was some books published. I don't know. It didn't seem like, at least Jackie, didn't seem like they made a whole lot of money from it.
No. I mean, it's not like they're making film franchises off of this or
right, certainly not like the Warrens level of their book deals,
right,
movie deals, you know. It's
but then again, this was a while ago, and for the 90s it's possible that it was, maybe she got something from it, or maybe she got totally like scammed by these guys,
right,
these investigators, and they came in and like
brutal
took over her story, took over, you know, the license for, you know, this haunting.
That's a cool theory,
because
too.
There have been people, and I haven't been able to confirm this, but there were people that said that in the years that followed, like the early 2000s, that she would write on blogs and stuff and talk about how she was always trying to like get her cut from them. Yeah. I think we mentioned this earlier, but she missed out on a lot of the earnings from some of the stories and shows and films and stuff.
So that
they kind of hosed her on
that. That theory is kind of sad, because like, let's say that all of those things were legitimately happening to her, and then this investigation team kind of just saw this as like, oh, we can exploit this woman, and then we can ham it up here.
Yeah.
And then we can dip and take our footage and our stories, and it's ours now. Doof. I never considered that.
That could happen. She could have legitimately been experiencing paranormal activity, but also dealing with the mental stress, anxiety, just her mental state, obviously, I think contributed to some of the things that she experienced. Mm-hmm. And I truly think she experienced sleep paralysis once or twice throughout this whole ordeal.
That's a good theory.
And she's just trying to like make it through each day. And then these guys come in claiming to help her. And in fact, they came in and they're like, ooh, here's a good opportunity to capitalize off this and hijack her story.
Damn.
And ran off with it.
Going with that theory, then, the whole Ouija board could have been set up because she's taking notes, right, on what's happening. And they could have been like, look, we don't want to deal with this woman anymore. We got our story. So let's go there. We'll do up this Ouija board scheme. It's like, it's this guy. We found this newspaper article. We can just confirm it's him and make this story so that she can drop it.
Yeah.
Like that could have been a part of it too.
Here's my other thing too. For these guys being educated paranormal investigators, how come there's zero mention of a Geiger counter coming in, any sort of EMF readings, any sort of like scientific paranormal investigation? There's literally no mention of like any sort of measurements or, you know, it's
and those
just,
were very available at this time.
Totally.
Too.
Yeah. Totally. All they have are flash camera photography that they took and video, you know, clips of them reacting to things that happen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It feels, even Ghost Adventures does a better job.
Yeah.
When they investigate spots, like, yeah. You know, like, and we did mention they did bring a few pieces of equipment there, but it was all related to audio video. To me, it sounded like more of a film crew coming in than a paranormal investigation team who's actually there to figure out what's going on.
Okay.
And
I'm on your theory. I'm sold. That's a great theory, actually. That's a good one.
Because I think people miss that all the time. They're like, they don't even consider, like, well, for paranormal investigators and Barry Taft being UCLA, this and that, where's the scientific method being applied to this at all? Where's any scientific device being applied to the situation? No. It's all cameras and video cameras. And it's, of course, their guys experiencing stuff. I don't know.
Wow,
it's just
that could be it. It's an exploitation case here.
Yeah, I feel terrible for Jackie because I think she clearly went through a very difficult period of her life throughout this whole ordeal. And I think these guys came in and just made it 10 times worse and then tried to hijack her own story from her and then go and make money off of it.
That's a great theory.
But
I'm on board.
Danny, what do you think? What do you make of all this?
I kind of agree with you on that. It's the paranormal team kind of messing with her. I think Jackie was probably experiencing, whether or not it's paranormal, I think she was experiencing a hardship in her life. And I think the paranormal team came in and they saw, you know, this single woman who's obviously, you know, stressed. She feels unsafe in her home. She seems kind of desperate, and they took advantage of that. I think that would explain, you know, the hanging in the attic. I think that could have been easily staged with, you know, a clothesline and a nail that he could keep in his pocket. The only thing I genuinely can't explain throughout this whole thing is the ooze. That one I have no explanation for. Everything else seems like it could be easily faked, like the mark on the baby's head. Even Jackie said that it was, you know, lipstick or some sort of grease paint. And I could easily see one of the camera guys just, you know, going in and out of the house, just reaching down just on the baby. To me, it really seems like they were trying to ham this, like you said, hamming this up so they could sell their product later. And the fact that they kind of cut her out of it even kind of proves that theory a little bit more. But only thing I cannot explain is the ooze. That one just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, that's a really tough one because there is pictures of this supposed ooze, but we don't have confirmation or like a lab report that shows that this ooze was actually tested.
And it's weird because it doesn't look exactly like blood. It's like kind of this like beige-ish goo. But maybe the blood is like somewhere mixed in there, like coming from a weird decomposing body. Like it's just goo and like a little bit of blood mixed in there or something.
They specifically said plasma. Like to get plasma out of blood, you have to use a centrifuge.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I don't know how they specifically
it's like lab blood.
Plasma. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's what I couldn't understand either. But
for all we know, it could just be rusty water. You know what I mean? It could just be like some type of concoction.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, some type of building material that's like rotting in the wall. It is an old home and, you know, there's I think some rational explanations for that. But if we go off of like it was tested and it was human plasma, I think that's just like really crazy and doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But
it's unique.
Yeah, it's very unique to this.
What about the lights? What do you think of the lights? Just a exposure trick?
I mean, I think what Jackie, again, I can't really explain what Jackie saw with her camera. I don't know. Maybe she was in on it. we don't know, and maybe she got cut out of the deal at the end. I don't think that. I think she definitely was maybe experiencing something, whether it was, you know, sleep paralysis or maybe just stress getting to her. I don't know. Mm. But I don't trust the investigation team or any of the evidence they produced. I trust Jackie's evidence more than the investigative team.
Totally. You would think if they were really there to help her too, they would have sought help for her. You know, right. Why not get a psychiatrist in there or get a psychologist or get a doctor or get a, you know, somebody else to come in and try to like find a solution to the problem. Instead,
no, they're like, it's late.
Let's provoke it and piss it off, and so that we can hopefully capture some footage
and then leave this poor woman just alone.
Yeah, that says a lot to me. You know what I mean? There's very little care being given to Jackie, and it seems like, and for all we know, like the whole romantic thing could have been played up by one of them to try to get her to keep letting him back in and schmooze her. You know what I mean?
Like trying to safety.
Totally. Mm. It seems like a case of exploitation.
Yeah.
Of a victim here who is dealing with a very difficult part of her life, and maybe was dealing some mental health issues, and these guys came in and just try to capitalize on it.
Yeah.
Crazy.
If I was a paranormal investigator and I experienced the things that Jeff experienced, I would not leave that house for any reason. I would stay there
forever
and get as much information as I can, but he kept leaving and coming back. And I think it's because he had to go get stuff to get new schemes. I don't trust him.
That's a good point. I'm a weirdo here, maybe. If I was actually strung up and nearly hanged in an attic by a ghost, and I could potentially get that on camera again and prove to the world that this is real, I would just put myself up there with all my cameras and all my gear. I'm like, kill me.
Do it again.
Riot now.
Yeah, right.
And like, I would just stay up there for a while. So that's a good point that they kind of was just like, that's enough. Okay, we're gone. And I get like, there is a lot of fear there, but yeah, I would just stay in the house forever. I'd be like, this is our one chance to actually capture.
Storm chasers go after tornadoes.
Right. Yeah.
Why are they running from the thing they're trying to capture?
Right. Yep. Yeah.
Because they got to figure out what the next scene's going to be.
Yeah.
Like, I got to figure out what's next.
Yeah.
All right. That was pretty good. Footage looked good.
Yeah.
All right.
Wrap it up.
Yeah.
And cut. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it kind of seems like to me. I don't think necessarily there wasn't anything paranormal going on. I think there could have been for sure. Like, it seems like this old house, you know, just all the other evidence there, I think, is pretty compelling. And the pictures that Jackie captured, I think, are really interesting. And I think they just kind of like, you know, hammed it up and enhanced it to try to get an end product that they wanted to sell at the end of the day, rather than trying to actually legitimately help her.
Yeah.
Because but again, it is interesting to me that all it took for this all to go away and for Jackie to stop experiencing things was connecting with the entity and talking to it and like kind of just like sorting out, this is what happened to you. And then things kind of subsided. I don't know. I'm sure there's probably more to the story than what's out there publicly. And maybe, you know, maybe things just got better for her in her life and personally. And that helped as well. Because again, I do think like if the paranormal is real, and I do kind of believe in this idea of these paranormal entities kind of feed off of your emotions and your energies. And I think if there's anything that kind of has some validity to it, it's that. It's like,
agreed.
Because it's kind of the idea of like you attract what you put out there. It's kind of that whole concept of, you know, if you're, you know, mentally going through it and, you know, your energy's, you know, very anxious and scared and, or negative, just flat out negative, that you're going to attract maybe more of that to you. So I don't know.
I don't think there's any ghost story where like the paranormal's going after like a guru who has, he's got his whole life together, like a Buddhist monk or anything. Yeah. Like,
I don't think there's anything totally like that. It's always people going
through distress,
difficult situations. And I think there's something to that. So yeah, I don't know. We want to know your thoughts, of course. Do you think this happened, and which theory do you kind of align with? We'd love to know your thoughts in the comments below. And by the way, if you're watching on YouTube or you're listening elsewhere, pop over to the YouTube channel and help us reach 500,000 subscribers. We're almost there.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. That'd be a nice, like, little Christmas present for us.
Yeah. Do it. Please.
Make us very happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, love all you. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week with another one. You know, the spookiness continues in our October, you know, the official month for Lights Out. It's Halloween every day here. So we'll see you guys next time. Until then, Lights Out, everybody.